And you're very welcome to the final edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. The Christmas special, it's called, for 2025. And, well, what a year it has been in the property markets across Ireland and Northern Ireland. And, yeah, something that we're going to really reflect on today's property podcast. A big thank you to everyone who's been listening down through the year. It's been great feedback. And to our special guests who have joined us from the property markets from all over Ireland, England, and Northern Ireland as well. And it's always great to bring real good guests to our show each and every month. But also it's good to speak to people who's actually doing things in the market across those sectors to give you some hopefully golden nuggets to help you along within your journey in property as well. Well, today, of course, is the Christmas special. An end of year review, let's call it. And well, I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio today with the one and only Mr. Paul Kennedy from Amplify, all the way up in Belfast today. He's got a lovely Christmas jumper on. Paul, how are you? And your second time back to the podcast.
Yes, yes, all doing well, thanks. Yes, in the Christmas spirits with the jumper on, absolutely. Keeping well.
It's been another busy year for yourself up in, I suppose for our listeners who don't really know you, Paul, maybe just give yourself a quick introduction on where you invest and what exactly you do.
Yeah, so I've been investing in Belfast and surrounding areas for about 5 or 6 years. We have a large portfolio of a mixture of HMOs, buy-to-lets, and some Airbnb short-term lets. Earlier this year, after a bit of a push, I packed in the full-time job as such. It was in an engineering background, and since March I've been full-time in the property, and I run a Amplify Property Solutions. So that's a business that buys people investment property that are maybe not don't have their feet on the ground, or they are too busy maybe with family or businesses or other things. So we buy them investment property in a hands-off manner. So this year's been good to us. We've certainly seen a real growth in the business when I went full-time at it and got a lot more time. And also our own portfolio has been rapidly expanding, and we've taken on a lot more private investment this year to be able to do that. So, so upon reflection, it's been a strong year for us.
Very good, Paul. And I suppose that reflecting back on that big decision you had to make in March and something you've been, you know, getting up to over the last number of years is potentially moving away from your career. And, you know, you've been within that industry for a long, long time. Huge, huge decision for you. But congratulations on doing that and reflecting on it. Are you happy? Or are you still stressing?
It's been 8 or 9 months, and it's been fantastic. I've been really blessed. I haven't looked back. I really, really enjoyed my job as an engineer. Managed a lot of people. It was very, very enjoyable, but it just got to the point where property was really dominating what my time and my energy and my focus. Something I enjoyed. It's also given me flexibility with a young family, a lot more so than I ever would have had. So I can lift them from school, I can be at events, and just generally be a better life balance, maybe is the best way to put it. So I've been very blessed that way, and no looking back, certainly, and it's full steam ahead.
Yeah, and looking down south, we are of course up north here, but we head down south and to Waterford and to the jumperless, Christmas jumperless I should say, Lisa O'Reilly. How are you? Are you keeping well?
Good, good. Sorry I'm late, guys. Thanks for coming on, Paul, and getting into the festive spirits. I am. How are you all keeping?
Yeah, well, we've got a bit of stone back on again of weight, and we haven't even had Christmas yet, you know. But suppose once you put it on, you have to take it off, isn't that right, Paul?
That's it, 100%. Worry about that in January.
So no, I was just doing a quick reflection with Paul. You know, he's left his corporate gig this year, and as I say, he's hit the real world. But someone who's been in the real world working, doing untold damage down about Waterford there and all across Ireland now is Lisa. Lisa, how are you? Anyway, it's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be back on. We've not done a podcast for a while, have we, Warwick? We've been busy doing other stuff, but no, we definitely needed to get back onto it. Waterford has been... really, really busy. So since we last spoke on the podcast, I've done, what have I done? A 6-bed HMO, 5-bed HMO, and another 4-bed HMO with the hairdressers at the back. So yeah, we're going to go for planning permission in January for one of them to put apartments into it, and yeah, it's just all bingo. But look, it's been hectic, and City Stays Zen is growing then as well. And yeah, no, it's just been hectic, but I love every minute of it. And Paul, you were saying about like the freedom that property gives you, with your family and that, and it's true, it really does. Like if you're stuck in the corporate world, you do get kind of caught up with, can I take time off for kids and things like that. And property has allowed me, I suppose, to be flexible, albeit I do serious hours. Like, don't get me wrong, I do savage hours, and the pressure sometimes is unbelievable. But then, there'll be days like, today where I have to leave early, to bring the kids somewhere for Christmas, So no, it does allow you to do that.
And that's the thing as well, I suppose, Paul, is in those moments when you're questioning yourself, as Lisa has indicated, it's not all sun and rainbow. We know exactly the pressures that comes with it, and sometimes people really don't understand those particular aspects. But maybe we'll come back to the markets very shortly indeed. But that factor, has that been something that you've learned to deal with over the last year or 8 months a bit better, or is it still as a
Yeah, I think when I started, I probably took my foot off the gas. I think it was just to take a sigh of relief for maybe 2 or 3 months. There was still lots going on, but I definitely sort of pushed back. I think I rebelled a little bit. I stayed away from the emails. Well, tried to. The calendar wasn't as structured, and I think that was just purely a pushback from 15, 16 years in the corporate world where emails and calendar ruled your day. That was sort of March this summer. We had a really good summer with the family. And then since we've kind of locked in the back end of the year, we've done some crazy long days, a lot of hours, similar to what Lisa said. Now, they're maybe punctuated with family time in the middle or lifting school kids from school. So it's maybe not long. It's maybe not 9 to 5 hours, but it's certainly, very late evenings, early mornings, certainly weekends, nights, just working around the kids, which is great. I don't complain about it, but I think already I've probably filled my calendar back to the similar sort of hours I was doing before. But I would argue, yeah, that's time and hours that I'm putting into my own business. The more I do, the more I see the benefit from. And we have seen the business push on with putting those sort of hours in. So I think going into the new year, we'll be looking to structure our days and our weeks a little bit better and even more, just as we learn how to what sort of self-employed life looks like. So certainly been a learning curve. Still haven't got it down as to what a normal day looks like, but I think sometimes that's a benefit. A normal day maybe isn't traditionally a normal day at all, when you're self-employed. Learning that, I'm always all ears to everyone else that's doing similar roles and doing it very well. So certainly a learning curve for me at the moment.
What does your
Well,
average day look like, Paul? Are you, like, say, for example, what are you doing today? So where are you heading off to today? Have you got a
yeah,
project to go
so
to? Or?
so today is Thursday is the day that myself and my wife don't well my wife's off. She works part-time. So we always say when we quit the job, we've young family, so outside of any time we get together without kids, life is hectic, as we all know, with kids. So Thursday always said, look, try and take a half day to yourselves. Now that has been slowly eroded quite badly to the point where I can't remember the last Thursday. So this morning we're going to the gym, getting a coffee, a walk and lunch, which is, I guess, rare for us with no kids, but it's something we're trying to put back into our sort of strict protection, protect that day. But outside of a normal Thursday, yeah, normal day is gym, help with the kids out the door again. Previously, I was never involved in getting kids out the door because I was out the door to work at 6:30 in the morning. So that's been nice, trying to help. We know the madness of getting kids to school. Hit the gym, and then kind of from 9 o'clock, 9:30, then it's 1 or 2 days a week sort of on site, or certainly trying to chase a lot of things on site. And then I've been trying to be a wee bit more disciplined. I go to one of the shared workspaces 1 day a week, in my local town, and just knock out a lot of admin paperwork, It's something I don't overly enjoy, but I find if I sort of dedicate a day to it, one full day of sort of on the laptop, as I say, gets most of my painful paperwork and other things done. Throughout the day, it'll be fairly ad hoc on the other days, picking up, speaking with private investors. Sourcing business has grown massively. So I'll be going to see at least maybe three, four, five properties a week, speaking to clients, potential clients, chasing paperwork. And as I say, yeah, just all the ins and outs of building a property portfolio as well, day to day. So very varied, but I would like to make it a little more structured and efficient. And I think I'll see even more benefit to that in the new year once we start sort of fleshing that out.
Yeah, get shit done. Is that what they
That's
say?
it. Yeah.
But like the old terminology on that is, suppose there's going to be a little bit of chaos, until you find your feet. And
Yep.
it's like everything, it's you just got to dig deep on it. Going back into investment finance and things like that, some people might not understand investment finance, Lisa, and hunting down investors and trying to find opportunities to make a margin for them and to make a margin for yourself. Has that been something you have you've done really well in, but you've also, I suppose, had to realize that you're selling something here. You have to get on the phone or you have to go and meet someone. Has that been something you found interesting or something you thought you couldn't do or something that you thought, look, jeez, I didn't realize I had to do that in property.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, for definite. So I suppose I come from an accounting background, so in my mind the numbers make sense. How do you not get this? When you go and explain something to somebody, with the numbers, and it's like you have to kind of speak around the numbers. You have to kind of paint the picture. People don't get it as quickly as what you get it. So you have to slow down your talk. You have to, you really have to just paint the picture. And I suppose I found that really like challenging at the beginning. I suppose what I've had to learn in since I've been in doing this now for the last like 4 or 5 years is people don't move as quick as what you do. I'm important to myself, obviously, because our own business is our number one. But when you're going and speaking to maybe a potential investor or somebody who who's selling a house, that might not be their number one priority. So what you've got to realize is you've got to understand, well, what is their priority? What are they looking for, basically? And try to work out, well, the service that you're offering, how does that satisfy their needs? And you'll find a lot of the times when you are talking to investors that this just isn't a priority to them right now. So you're just setting the seed and then you just let it there. Don't keep on pushing. There's no point in trying to push. So you just, you quickly work out who this is not a priority for right now. And then you leave it be. And then they will, if they want it in the future, they'll come back to you. I suppose the ones where the stars align for you, say, is someone who wants what you're giving at the same time as what you're offering, and they feel like they can trust you. So a lot of people will go on gut feel and whether they can trust you or not.
Yeah.
And I suppose the stars align, then that's where you can get a really good investor to help with your property portfolio.
There's certain things there that comes, and trust is a big thing. And suppose that's where people get nervous, or they get a wee bit inquisitive in a way, like what's security? And you have to sell the dog, insure the dog maybe. But And what I mean by that is suppose is expectation something that you've found maybe difficult, Paul, in a way from when you're raising investor finance, or is it just a lack of maybe understanding, or what have you found?
I think the process we take and the approach we take is social proof through a lot of our social media. So I would say 90%, maybe even higher, of any of our private finance comes through our socials. So I think they're coming at it slightly warmed up, but maybe a warm lead or something you would call that. So there is a basic understanding-ish of what we do. I know I do put a call to action out on our socials every once in a while. I talk about, here's a project that was funded by a private investor where we've paid them back last week and they've gained X thousand pounds in interest. So for us, the conversation tends to be I think maybe one step further. We're not picking these guys up cold, and I've now ventured into LinkedIn, and maybe that's where I will be picking up maybe people where there is no knowledge or very little knowledge of how the system works or what we do. But I guess I treat the conversation, whether it's a call or a coffee or whatever, in the same manner. We step through what we do. We provide proof of what we do, and past examples of investors and testimonials of what we do and how we do it, and that's been fairly positive for us. I would say, looking back, say 2 3 years ago to where we are now, I'd be surprised at, I'm not going to say how easy people are willing to invest with us, but we haven't found a huge amount of worry or panic. We talk about the guarantees we give, personal guarantees, or the legal charges, and very quickly you can sort of figure out what, especially if you're meeting them in person, you can very quickly figure out what level of, maybe not the word risk, but the appetite they have for the different types of offerings we're having, and then you can tailor the conversation around what you're hearing back from them. I think the important point is if you're going into a conversation about private finance, maybe needing to raise some money, you have more than a couple of, are you more than one option? You have a couple of options ready to go. So when maybe they sort of hit you with something different, or maybe it's a different tone to what you thought you were going to be speaking to them with, then you can maybe pivot onto a different strategy or a different option, whether that's by paying them back over monthly instead of annually, or different terms, different term length. Just be prepared for that. But we've had fairly good success now. I would say we try to screen a lot of conversations before we take time over coffee or longer Zoom calls, just to ensure that everyone's on the same page to a point. I think I was guilty of what maybe Lisa was saying before, that I would probably try to force things a bit. And I've learned that doesn't work. People have lives, and as Lisa mentioned, there are lots of other things. If there's a chance you maybe run a business, or they're highly successful in their job or family and career. So private finance likely, as mentioned, isn't number one. So constantly ramming it down their throat or constantly checking in with them probably doesn't help too many people. So it's just getting that balance and learning all that. I've certainly put my foot in it a few times, but I think we like to think that we've refined the process, and we'll be always learning and looking to learn even more in this field.
And in a market where there's such a demand, and it's we'll touch into that now on 2025, and just the issues now is quite severe when it comes to property and to getting people housed and the regulation, and obviously down in the southern part of Ireland, it's a minefield at the minute, Lisa. I've kind of turned off a wee bit from it because there's just so much. You just don't know from one day to the next. Do they want landlords? Do they not want landlords? They're actually, desensitized. They're making it nearly impossible. I would say it is impossible to be a landlord down in the south now, currently, the way legislation and all the other aspects have really gone.
Yeah, it's tough, and I tell you, next March, April time, we're expecting it to all change. The landscape's all going to be changed again. So they're bringing out these new kind of rules where there's going to be, you can reset market rent in March. Because up until now we've had these rent caps, where you can only kind of increase the rent every 2 years by 2%. Sorry, every year by 2%. And in the last couple of years, it's only been like less than 2%. It's been like whatever the HICP index is or whatever it is. So basically, the rent increases have been non-existent. Now, there are a lot of properties. So that what that's created in the market so far is a real big difference between properties that are newly been brought on board, which they're charging crazy colossal rents, and properties then that have been rented since, before these rent caps were even brought in, and they're being charged ridiculously low rents. So it's created this real big kind of, really high and really low rents, and there's not that kind of opportunity to bring those low rents up to the high rents or up to even middle ground rents until now. So in March, what they're doing is they're saying all new tenancies can be brought up to market rent. But what that they've done then, on the other hand, is they said that your tenant can stay in that house for up to 6 years, and you have no rights to basically kick them out for 6 years. So if you want your house back in 6 years, if you want to sell it, if you want to do anything with your house, give it to a family member, you can't do that basically now from March onwards, because they've allowed you to increase the rent up to market rent now. But what they're doing in the on the back end is giving even more rights to tenants. So basically what's happening is what we're after finding is a lot of landlords have give notice to their tenants in the last, say, 6 months. They're starting to vacate their property. So you'll see down in the Southern Ireland now, there'll be a lot of vacant properties at the moment because they're all waiting to start new tenancies in March so that they can reset their market rent. But what's like, I suppose they're not thinking on the long end is that, look, basically, once you're done then, once you set your market rate in March, market rent in March, that's it. You're basically there for the long haul, sort of thing, until the next 6 years. So look, it has created, it's hard to know. I don't think the same rules apply to the big kind of the big investors, like the big development funds. So I don't know. It's hard to know. Do they actually want landlords? But what it's going to do in the long term is it's going to force more landlords out of the market, I think. People are really burying their head in the sand as well at the moment until March comes. And then also what's going to happen then as well is a lot of the, I don't know if they're doing this in Northern Ireland, but in Southern Ireland, they're housing a lot of Ukrainians under the ARP scheme. And in March, I think that rate is actually going to come down again. So I think there's going to be two things going to hit the market, the rental market at the one time next year. And then equally, I think what's happening next year, but again, I don't know when exactly this is going to happen. The Airbnb and the short-term rental laws are all going to change, and you're going to need planning permission for short-term rentals, and they're going to be enforcing it and looking for license numbers and all the rest of it. So I think next year, in the first maybe 1 or 2 quarters, I think there's going to be a lot of shake-up in the market, and I honestly don't know what it's going to look like, but I think people in property should be prepared for, keep an eye on what's going on, sort of thing, and be prepared to pivot if they need to.
Yeah, okay. And that's a, I suppose, as we look at the Irish market, that's a massive issue. Let's call it as it is. When you look at the development targets, they're not meeting them. Or, I suppose when you're putting on legislation, it's in this particular climate across markets, causing major issue. And we see it in Northern Ireland as well, Paul. Suppose specifically around HMOs, and obviously there is a massive market for HMOs, but I know in Derry City planning has been reviewed over the last year or so, and so where there's general issues, maybe not an issue, seems to be that they want to create an issue. And maybe that's also something that you don't see as an investor, that sometimes when you're looking at different areas trying to maybe bring a quality product to the market, those elements are unforeseen and very frustrating at times.
No, we're seeing that maybe not to the same extent here in Northern Ireland, but I think you can hear and you can sort of read between the lines of the UK government. I would imagine we'll be heading towards something sort of similar to an extent. There's obviously renters reform that's hit England, and Northern Ireland tends to be a number of years behind that, so we can probably get a glimpse of what's coming. That way, certainly, there's more and more challenges around paperwork, legislation, costs. Planning is a particular challenge. We have obviously NI Water is causing a lot of challenges. It's very, very little or nothing is being passed due to supposed capacity issues on the water infrastructure system in Belfast and Northern Ireland. So it just makes anything you're trying to do particularly challenging. You think you know your costs, and then when you get into it, suddenly something else hits you. And it's just how you navigate that, and maybe change tact. Certainly for us, HMO has been a big focus for us in the last number of years. I don't think we're going to go away from it, but we're certainly going to maybe diversify away into some other strategies alongside that. We've a number of projects that are just ground to a halt maybe is the best way in planning, and you're just sitting there not knowing what to do, and trying to pick up the pieces and try and understand, is there another slant, there's another take you can do in this project, because obviously you have investor funds tied up in it, and at the moment, you know, some of those funds aren't sort of turning over, or you're not doing anything with them. So yeah, I think the other option, or the other thing to think about is obviously anytime there's change or perceived challenge, there's opportunity. But it's just getting educated, and probably surround yourself with similarly minded or people that are further down the line or more educated than myself, and understand what they're going to do, or what opportunity is brought, and maybe try and get ahead of the masses. You know, while everybody's burying their head in the sand, there's certainly opportunities. I know there's landlords exiting when the budget was released there last month. So there's, you know, okay, the budget's impacting people owning property in personal name, but is there an opportunity to go and buy that property in limited company, or do something different, and make you know, there's opportunities there where other people see challenges. So yeah, there's always going to be opportunity. It's just trying to find them, and make use of the legislation and the rules and the laws that are maybe changing. So trying to maybe spin it, and as I say, pick up something different, or maybe look at something in a different light, is certainly what we're going to be aiming for in the next sort of 6 to 12 months here.
And just reflecting on the Northern Irish market, you know, I suppose looking at the year as a whole, there's been you know, a good increase in property prices. They're raising, falling, suppose rents are raising as well. The economic aspect, it's stability across the region. If anything, there's a lot of growth, because I think I was speaking to one or two of the agents in Belfast, and they're starting to see some people move from the south because obviously Dublin's so expensive, you know.
Yeah.
Is that a trend you're seeing, is it?
Yes. I was speaking actually to the owner of a large estate agency just yesterday, and a sort of, you know, the old conversation, when are you finishing Christmas? Are you winding down? And he says, we've been trying to wind down since the end of November. He says, without being dramatic, he says, we've never seen the market. And I sort of asked him, is it residential, is it investment? He says, it's everything. You know, you sort of saying, obviously, a solicitor's, tomorrow's Friday. He says, tomorrow we'll see, obviously, the final completions, but they says they will just be building up over Christmas, and then they'll be hitting, you know, there'll be a lot more completions to complete in January. But just the sheer number of house sales, and he was saying also rentals, you know, people are moving into new rental tenancies between Christmas and New Year. He says that's how, you know, that's how high demand and how crazy things are at the moment. And that's what we're seeing. You know, demand for rent is off the scale. Any properties we're finishing for ourselves or our clients, you know, maybe I predicted maybe, I don't know, 800 or 850 rent. You know, by the time we've done the refurb, it's only maybe 3 months down the line. It's starting with a 9, some of the rents, you know, and, you know, the agents, you know, saying comfortably we will get that. That's what the market's demanding. One we finished there recently, it was 14 people queued out the door at the first viewing. And okay, we do a good job and do a good product, but, you know, it is a sample of the market of where things are at. You do a good product in the right area, it will rent all day long. In terms of sales, we're seeing a lot of stock coming to us, a lot of off-market, people just wanting to sell quietly, tired landlords, maybe family members with maybe selling a family home. But I would say it's never been stronger. I think that's coupled with I'm obviously doing this full time now, so I'm probably seeing more because I'm out more, but we are certainly not finding an issue to find property for clients, and certainly coming across some good opportunities for ourselves.
I'm just looking at that, Lisa.
What sort of money are we talking then, Paul? Like, just give me an example of what the kind of the units you're dealing with. Like, what would be the purchase price refurb, and then say, what could you rent it for?
Yeah, so I'll give you two examples. One I've just finished. So very, very popular location in East Belfast. Kind of, you can walk into the city, young professionals. There was a property there. We purchased it for 108. It was realistically probably worth about 120. Purchased for 108. Just finished a refurb at 33,000. It'll be obviously fees and stamp duty and legals all on top of that. But it will value in around 170, 180 on a good day. It's being rented for 950 a month, so, you know, that's strong. If you go back in there, remortgage that out the back end, That's a strong, you're pulling a good chunk of money out, and to say the 950 rents, is strong. That's East Belfast, North Belfast, similar, just similar percentages, just different numbers. Purchased the property there for 72,000. Now it needs a new roof and a few other things, but a 22,000 pound refurb. It'll value in around 110,000, and rents about 750 to 795, probably 795 by the time we do it, and the market will have moved on, and maybe 795, even 800 won't be a big ask, for such a product. So yeah, we're
You're
picking
talking
those up.
around like between 7.5 to 10% returns on units that are costing probably around the between the 100 and 150 mark, between like buy-in, purchase, refurb, all the rest of it.
And it's obviously just in the, the purchase plus the refurb. A lot of my clients are just looking a bit of equity in there. So, maybe we spend 150 and the property's worth 170. So, from the finished refurb, there's 20,000 or 15,000 or, of extra value built in there. Whether they recognize that by going to remortgage straight away or just having, they know that it's in there maybe in 2 or 3 years' time when their mortgage term's up. The cash flow's good, but a lot of the clients are just looking, longer term capital growth as well. So it's working, Belfast working, it's a good combination there. You can get sort of between 10 and 15% return on investment on your capital in the deal. And then obviously we know capital growth is quite strong at the moment. So as a longer term play, it works well as for them as also.
Oh, all right, very good.
And just in down the south as well, at least I suppose there's been a new grant announced for redevelopment in towns. I see there's been an increase in the grant. I should say it was up to €140,000 now. So developers still can't touch that, I do believe.
Yeah, there's a couple of grants out there. There's also the vacant home grants in as well, and they extended that to investors as well. Now, I personally haven't used that grant yet. My business partner has used it, and he's going to use it a second time there now. I suppose when I go for these kind of refurbs, I see that I just want to get them done quick as possible, and the grants and the whole process of applying and getting the engineers out and the council out to kind of sign them off. I'd be like, I could get about 3 months of rent in before I get these grants kind of approved. So I always factor in the cost of the loss of 3 months rent, because it definitely holds you up when you apply for these things. So personally, that's what I do. Now obviously some of these grants would make more sense to do it, like the 50 grand, you can get 50 grand or you get 40 grand or whatever it is. It does make sense to do it and to hold it up. But yeah, no, there are definitely grants available. And I suppose, look, yeah, those kind of returns that you're getting, you can get those and a little bit more, I'd say, down the south, because we do, I'd say, I don't know, but we definitely have a severe housing crisis down here. Now, you get those kind of returns more easily in the likes of, say, the regional cities like Limerick and Waterford, and even Cork, really. Say Dublin could be harder to get those returns just because the purchase prices do tend to be that bit higher. Anybody that has a house in Dublin, they think that they've got the golden egg sort of thing, so that everybody really just starts from this really high kind of standpoint in the first place. So it is harder to kind of get those returns in the capital city, I suppose, which is like any place. But yeah, in the regional cities, there's definitely value to be had around here. And again, I suppose it's all down to then what your strategy is. So are you then going to go for standard rental, renting to a family? As long that's the least amount of work that you need to do. However, in my eyes, it's the most amount of risk, because you lose all of your rights when you rent to a family under the standard kind of the RTB and that. And then you can decide then whether you want to go down like the HMO route. And if you don't do it correctly, then that is also considered to be should be under the RTB. So you've got to get your kind of your ducks in a row if you are going to go the HMO route, but that can be more profit. It is more profitable than, say, standard rent. And then you've got like the serviced accommodation route, and then the short-term Airbnbs, I suppose, are the kind of the options. And then students, obviously. So students, you can always fall back on students, especially when you've got universities in your local area. I personally have steered clear of students. They can be profitable, but I just got this vision in my head that they're just going to wreck my house every May. I'm going to have a massive refurb to be done in May, and
Well,
so I just steered clear of them. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm giving them a bad rep.
I have students and they're great, and to be fair, we kind of have a clean around every week and keeps an eye on things. So as I say, our cleaner is as good as a cop. If there's anything gone wrong, she's on the phone. But no, that's interesting to see. And suppose, yeah, just faffing about would come back to my kind of terminology when you were mentioning about the council and all of this carry on with paperwork and things like that. I know what you're saying, Lisa. It can be a lot of faffing about. It's a lovely Donegal term, but just looking at the. We've gone very deep on the markets and looking at them, the weaknesses and everything else. But there's, as you said, Lisa, there's a huge issue in this market. And as I say, it's you can put all the legislation and everything else in you want, but people need places to live.
Yeah, they really do. And like all the legislation in the world, like at the end of the day, we're providing bedrooms, we're providing houses, we're providing like places for people to live in. And I suppose there would be if you're very risk adverse, it's a very difficult industry to get into because there are so many legislation. There's so much legislation in the industry that we're operating in. And if you're risk adverse or if you know, oh, I don't want to get involved in that because I could be doing something wrong. But in my mind, at the end of the day, you're providing a good service, you're providing a decent accommodation. Just like my mind, it's like just do it. Like why would you not do it? Just do it until you have to come up with, try and get yourself educated as much as you can. And I think the one good thing as well is if you are thinking about getting into property, is join a networking group. Like Porrick, you have a really good networking group and you're surrounding yourself with people who's been there, done that. They can give you nuggets of wisdom. They can, oh, I've tried that and this is how I messed up, or this is what I've done to get around that. And you can just share information, I did start up a networking group. I
You
tell you
didn't
straight
bore
out, Warwick,
yourself, let's be
it
honest.
was hard work and I let it go, and I shouldn't have let it go. But no, you run a really good networking event and you've kept it going, and I think it's a great resource for people to have, and they should definitely go to these networking events. So they're so cheap compared to what the information that you might actually get out of it, and
In
the relationships you can build.
2025, Paul Kennedy has stepped up to the mark as well. He's got he does a little bit of eating curry and talking property now, right?
That's
So
it,
you're
yeah.
hosting
Good.
you're hosting the
Pro
property
property and
pompadour.
pompadoms, yeah. No, just speaking on that with what you were saying there, Lisa, with sharing information. As I say, myself and William Keane, Northern Ireland here, we run the Belfast Property and Pompadoms event, and we have a WhatsApp group with lots of people in it. But even just yesterday, people were talking about the need, the recent changes in the electrics, the Link smoke alarms for fire alarms, and just I think somebody shared a story maybe of someone that got pulled up and fined, but then there's a lot of people chipped in and look, guys, make sure you've got this and this, and there were some other conversations about other legislation, and it's just a reminder, a lot of us know that already, that's great, but maybe somebody that's starting out or just wanting to get involved who's in that group, that's priceless information that to go and get that information from someone else if you're not really in the property industry or just starting out would be very difficult. And I say that's where being the right networking group really adds value, and especially it's not even just find me properties or how to get a mortgage, it's the details of legislation and stuff that you can really sort of trip you up on, and that's priceless in this day and age where there's just so much of it. Or somewhere you can just literally send a message, I'm struggling with this, guys. What do you think? And you'll have 2, 3, 4, 10 answers back probably within an hour. And that's priceless, I find. So 100% anybody that's wanting to get involved, find a property group that's local-ish to your area, that's maybe following the same legislation or the same government, the same rules, and learn, and try and contribute obviously as much as you can as well.
Yeah,
Yeah, for
absolutely.
sure.
And have a bit of fun too. You can't get very serious.
Absolutely.
I do enjoy the crack on content, and I was just thinking about this today. If I reflect back in 2025, it has been the year of TikTok traders, I think. they're just great crack. You know, they throw the phone on and they're fucking sticking up a bit of skirting or something, you know. But actually, it's all to do with trade, it's all to do with property, it's all to do with investment, and some of it, it's really good. And Lisa, you've taken a few photographs. I take a few photographs as well. But are we going to see Lisa O'Reilly next year, 2026, putting up a piece of paneling? Maybe in. Sticking it up
in as if I'm going to put up a piece of paneling, for God's sake. So at the moment, what have I got going on? I have, what's the plans for next year? So we're trying to grow City Stays, okay? So City Stays is a serviced accommodation business in Republic of Ireland. So what we do is we provide accommodation to like kind of contractors or, you know, project workers coming into Ireland, working on like large projects, maybe data centers or solar farms or whatever it is. So we're going to grow that business and continue to grow that business. On the other end, then I have a place where I am putting planning permission in for hopefully 8, maybe 9 apartments, if I can get the 9th apartment into it. So I'm going to be working on that next year. And then it's basically I've got 2 more investors who are looking to invest again. Now, they're looking to invest a bit more money this time. So I suppose I've been in my comfort zone up until now. I've been buying kind of like, you know, houses for, I think the max I've paid for a house is 280,000, you know. And so that's the max I've paid. You know. They're looking to invest a bigger sum of money. So I'm looking for some bigger projects now next year. So I really am going to step out of my comfort zone next year. And I'm going to look to some of the bigger properties and some of the bigger projects, because I feel like you're putting your time into them, you may as well be putting your time into maybe, you know, 10 apartments than one house sort of thing, you know. So and definitely get some like to leverage my time, you know. And so yeah, no, there's just more and more of I suppose what I'm doing. In terms of like getting out on social media, I need to become more consistent with it. I put out posts on LinkedIn and then I stop then for maybe 2 or 3 weeks because I just put my head down and get really, really busy. So I might look a little bit inconsistent and a bit flaky on social media. So I need to definitely put some time or get somebody to do it for me, you know, to keep it very consistent. So that is, I suppose, I do need to keep that up and running. So yeah, that's my plans for 2026. And how about you, Porrick? What's your plans?
Yeah, well, we're just finishing off 3-bed HMO. We've just taken the keys to another one. The team is in there now, currently ripping it out. And we've got a couple of apartments to start ourselves. Bit of a long story. It's been going on for nearly 2 years trying to get HMO planning for it, but it's not going to work out. So we're going to start them now in January. Roofers starting straight away, getting the roof. It's a listed building, so Paul knows all about them. They're great crack all together. But look, I can't wait to get this one done, started anyway. I've never done apartments before. And as I say, you know, we've been working on that. And no, there's other smaller projects we're looking at. Potentially one that will be starting towards the, I'll use my corporate language here, Q1, you know, towards the end of Q1. And look, just looking to raise more finance as well. Suppose that's the challenge. And suppose that's the two things really, isn't it, Paul? Whenever you're looking at property, it's finding deals and finding investors to go along with that, you know, and to continue to do that and stepping up a bit more on our podcast. And, you know, when you look at, I was very good at, same as yourself, Lisa, you know, sharing what we're doing on LinkedIn and things like that, but you fall behind. As Paul knows, he gives out to me an odd week, an odd Friday. We do a Friday morning with Paul as well in his Amplify group, which is really good. And I think going back on your WhatsApp, we're part of property education company over in the UK, Prosperity, really, really good. But just having a real severe focus on maybe raising finance this week, how many calls, how many people have you told what you're doing? And those aspects of pushing you is really key. You can do all of the education. I sit and listen to PowerPoint after PowerPoint, roll my eyes and go, right, I actually have to do something here myself. So I think it's taking it back to those small incremental aspects you have to do. Finding deals, finding money, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, I think I was chatting to a good friend inside that prosperity group there in last few weeks, and we're sort of saying, you know, I think when you're doing maybe one deal, which I'm not ridiculing at all, when you're doing one deal, you sort of go and find money, and then you focus on the work and the deal, and you work away, and then maybe another deal comes along, and you're maybe right, maybe that investor will roll their money over, or. But when you start to try and scale, which a lot of us inside that group have been trying to do in the last year or two, couple of years, you know, the levels of investment is much more bigger. There's multiple projects, there's multiple, you know, there's the purchase cost, there's a refurb cost. Sometimes the refurb cost is more or similar amounts to the purchase cost. So they're the amounts you're trying to raise. And we've come to the conclusion that raising money is something we need to do day and daily, or certainly on a regular basis. It used to be just go out, raise some money when you find a deal, and then, you know, you sort of sit about and focus on, you know, maybe the as I say, the refurb. But certainly the levels that we're working at, and a lot of ones we know we're working at, it's nearly an ongoing thing. Raising money is as important as finding the property. And you never know when a property comes maybe something you've looked at a year ago, and then it comes back to you. If you don't have an investor lined up, you're going to automatically be behind the black ball, and it's difficult to have an investor maybe say, look, I don't need your money now, but maybe, you know, in a month's time. And if you can work those relationships to understand that, and try and work those angles, then you're in a big, you're much better position. I know certainly even recently I was caught out. I had an investor lined up for a deal. Deal took a little bit longer, and the money didn't come through. Nobody's fault. In fact, not even the investor's fault. It was a scenario certainly outside of their hands, but it left us in a bit of a sticky wicket. And it just forced us to. And when you really, really, really need to find the money, you find it. So it just shows you, I think, instead of scrambling, being last minute, if you have a structured and systematic approach that's regular, and that's coupled in with the social media or whatever way you market yourself, you know, if you're consistent showing up, social proof, telling people what you do and how you do it, and that all adds in and helps. For us, certainly just being consistent on social media, a bigger push on private investment. We have a number of big projects that are due for refinance, finish probably January, end of January. There's three projects that we're finishing that will bring in a lot of money back in the business and get a lot of our investors paid back. So we need to start kicking off those conversations with the investors. Like, you're coming to the end of your term in the next month or two. What do you want to do? Do you want to go back in, et cetera, et cetera? So the first quarter will certainly see us finishing a lot of stuff.
Flexible as well, I think, Paul, right? Because like you're gonna have a load of investors like with their money back in their pocket. And some of them are gonna wanna just keep the money, hold on to it. But you might actually say, this is what happened to me there last year. So one of my investors, I repaid this year actually, I repaid them back along with all the rest of the investors. But one particular investor said that they wanted me just to keep the money. But I had no project for them for that money. So I took the assessment and said, look, it's probably going to cost me, you know, the guts of maybe 1200 in, euro for per month in interest if I keep the money, but I have nothing thought for it. So I said to myself, right, if I give back the money and save myself that 1200 euro, I might not get that money again. But if I
Yeah,
take the risk
absolutely.
on that 1200 euro and say, look, and I'll get the deal. The deal was coming over the line like in a month's time. And I think if you just be pragmatic about it, I think some people will be like, you know, I can't take that money because I'm going to lose money. I've got no deal for it. But if you're confident that you've, you know, something's coming down the line, maybe take the hit on it and just keep it going because it is really difficult to find an investor. So if you've got one, I think it's important to try and keep them. Obviously, don't lose too much money on them, but you know, in the long run, these investors, you might lose a little bit of money on them at the up front, but you will gain on them up front, and everybody can win, you know, because they're helping
Absolutely.
you build your portfolio and you're giving them the cash flow and the consistency of cash flow.
Well, look, we have been talking for quite some time, and it's been great. And you know, over 48 minutes, we will of course be sticking this out very quickly indeed to all our listeners on I suppose on YouTube, and also we'll stick it up on all the other various podcasts where you get your podcasts. But it's been fantastic. It's been another amazing year in the property circle. Thanks to everyone. Lisa, we get so many comments from everyone in relation to the guests. We couldn't do this without the guests and, you know, the knowledge that they bring each and every month, you know. And as I say, it's been a great year. And we are the award-winning Solid Foundations Property Podcast for 2025. So there you go. Thanks
Thanks, folks.
very much, guys.
All the
Thanks.
best.
All the
Thank
best,
you.
my boy.
All right, because.